The following episode of Backstory Podcast was recorded live at the 26th Annual Toronto Real Asian International Film Festival. You can listen to this episode and you can watch it on our YouTube channel. Hello and welcome to Backstory, the podcast from the Toronto Real Asian International Film Festival. I'm Aaron C.Y. Collier, the artistic director of Real Asian, and we are here recording live at Real Asian. We just finished an event and we're recording live. So for folks listening, there's a little bit of the end of an event here, but we are here with the writer and director of Unidentified, Jude Chun. It's day two of Real Asian Film Festival, where Unidentified is showing in a couple of days. It's a brand new science fiction film. The simple premise is UFOs come to Earth in the 90s and never leave, but we're going to get into a little bit more about that. But we're just so happy to have you here, Jude, and welcome to Real Asian. Welcome to Backstory.
Thank you. It's really great to be here.
Yeah. So. You know, we showed one of your short films in 2016. I was just wondering if you could just give us a little bit of background of you and, you know, where you grew up, how you got into filmmaking. Tell us a little bit about the previous film.
Yeah, well, actually, I grew up in Toronto from, like, high school on. Before that, I was in the States. But I've been in Korea for about 13 years now. Oh, okay. In the beginning, I have an uncle who's like been in commercials, and you know, I was just out of film school and was like, how do I get a job in the film industry? And he said, hey, you wanna come to Korea, just try it out? And I tried it out. I didn't actually work at the commercial company for long because it was like crazy Korean work culture, but I couldn't adjust. But like one thing led to another, and yeah, now I've been there for 13 years. Yeah. So 6 years ago was when I made the short film, came to Toronto Real Asian Festival for that, and did a few kind of like little festival run that was kind of okay. And then
The Time Agent,
it was called The Time Agent. It was like a time travel sci-fi kind
of thing. Won an award at Real Asian back then too.
That was really great. And like a few years after that, like almost like 2 years after my festival run, I put it online, you know, because it's a short film. It's not going to sell it to a distributor. So, and that's kind of when I got like it kind of interest online a lot more than kind of during the festival circuit. And I had kind of like got this deal with like these Hollywood studios to like option it as a feature. So, so they're doing something with it right now. Okay. I'm not sure exactly what, but they're kind of working on it. And in the meantime, I made my feature, first feature, which we started in 2019, and then something happened. You might know. Something just kind of delayed it.
Some of you may have heard of,
right? And yeah, and finally, so it's been like a three-year kind of journey finishing it. And yeah, we're finally back at Real Asian with the feature now.
Yeah, so go back to that beginning of Unidentified. So 2019, had you been working on a script? You know, did you have an idea? Okay, this is the time to get going. And then, so where did you start creatively with this film?
I think maybe if I go even a little bit back, the short film I made, it was called The Time Agent. Mm-hmm. So it's like the poster is like this guy in like this suit, like this Reservoir Dogs kind of suit, like he's like this agent, and it's a time travel story, but that's kind of like a bait and switch. It's nothing like that. There's almost like no plot. It's more like a character based thing. So I kind of had this thing of like package it as a genre movie, but then really do some a lot more like character based, like non plot driven, like kind of a bit of experimental stuff in that. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I had an idea for, like the UFO movie, kind of like we'll have like this poster with this huge UFO and like Independence Day, like but then nothing will happen.
It's kind of a super interesting hook, right? Yeah. Like, and the visual is really, really like arresting, you know. You open the film with that, and you start with the premise of the film, and then it kind of like unfolds in lots of different directions, lots of different layers. I also really appreciated like knowing that you had grown up in Toronto, and not to be like a like yay Canada thing, but like you even had the UFO like with the CN Tower,
Leonardo DiCaprio. Once upon a day. That's us.
Totally.
Oh my.
So you wanted to kind of like have a genre hook. Mm-hmm. But do something a little bit different. So I mean, I think there's so many themes to pull from this film, but maybe from you, what were some of those themes that you wanted to explore? Because, you know, for us watching it, it's, you know, it's very humanist, you know, existential in a lot of ways, but what was driving you thematically?
Yeah, I think that's really kind of, it was like a thematically driven script, like from when I wrote it. It was kind of, it wasn't so much, okay, like, oh, I have this great, like, storyline or this great, like, single character, because we have, like, so many other characters, more like an ensemble of characters rather than a single character. But it was this idea that that emotion of this huge black, like, city-sized sphere just floating in the sky, and everyone can see it. We all know it's there, but we don't know what it means. And that's kind of what the world felt like. Kind of like, I was writing it in like 2018, 2019, and just kind of the sense of confusion about the world where maybe like our parents' generation, especially immigration, like they had a hard time, right? Like, or my grandparents' generation, like the Korean War and stuff. But it, for them, it was kind of more like, it's a struggle, but there's like a clear goal, and the struggle itself is clear. It might be difficult, but it's kind of more defined, kind of like how World War II, it's like there's the Nazis, you beat them, and it's tragic, horrible, like the fighting, the soldiers dying and all that, but at least it's defined. But these days, I felt like the thing is, it's just, the struggle doesn't even seem defined. Mm-hmm. It seems so hard to understand, like, what's going on. Mm-hmm. Even, like, I don't know, like, politics or something. But then, speaking generally, when you see, like, the politics going around, I think maybe before, when I was growing up, it seemed like, okay, I agree with this side and I disagree with this side. There are these debates you can... There are pros and cons and stuff, but these days it felt like we're not even speaking the same language. If it's like just the basic facts of like, this is an orange. Do you like it or do you not like it? Do you like pizza? Do you like Chinese? Like, it's not it's like, this isn't a pizza. It seems like the discussion. This is like, doesn't exist.
It's
like,
cheesy bread.
So that kind of emotion of just confusion and, I've had some feedback, like, who watched the film after it was done, people close to me, and they said, it's kind of confusing, because there isn't, like, this traditional, like, plot structure or something like that, but then I've kind of feel like, that's kind of a feature, it's not a bug. I think the confusion is kind of part of what I wanted to convey with the film, like just the sense of
I think it speaks so much to our time, like you know, it's an appeal to humanity, but like we live in madness. You know what I mean? And you know, it's so hard to like think like have we just always lived that way, and maybe we're just connected in more surface ways, deep, you know, like with more people. But but so in terms of like the, you know, you very clearly right off the bat, I think you start the film in 1993. Mm-hmm. Like why that year? Why that generation? I mean, you spoke to that a little bit, but are you born in 1993?
No. Oh, I wish. A lot older than that. Yeah. There wasn't like a huge reason, but I kind of did want to send it further in the past, but because of... it was going to be set in Korea, and in Korean history, if you said it in like the 80s, that's kind of when Korea is becoming like democratized. There's like so much other stuff, like with the UFO, you can't really focus on the UFO. There's all this political strife and like coup d'etats, like all these like democratization like stuff going on. So it becomes like a period kind of thing. So, but in the 90s, and that's also when I went to Korea. I grew up in the States, like New York, Philadelphia, around that area. And then in 93, we went to Korea and we stayed there till 97. So I kind of know a bit of Korea at that time period,
Yeah, I mean, so there's so many kind of different forms this takes, and you have a lot of vignettes, kind of like you're saying, there's not, you know, one kind of central character. I mean, what was the challenge of kind of doing something that was more diffuse, right? Mm-hmm. With these different characters, ensemble. Like talk about that process a little bit different, you know, how you approach that.
I think in terms of, for example, not being a main character and not having, even when you have many characters, usually you have like one character who goes on that arc, right? The character arc. And I kind of have that with one character.
Yeah.
But also that's given in like bits and pieces so that it doesn't like hit you in the face. Like this change is not supposed to feel meaningful like it does in most character driven movies. I kind of want it to feel more like, and also I have like most of the characters are Korean, but there's like all these people from different countries like doing like talking head interviews, and like just that and just the number of characters, all these kind of factors, I wanted to add up to feel like this isn't a story about a specific character, but kind of like just like the world in general.
Were there any films that you were drawing on for inspiration in that approach? Or if you weren't, that's okay too.
I think there might be. I'm not sure.
Well, and also the different forms, like you mentioned the documentary kind of elements. And so you're mixing that. So what was behind that?
So kind of like that, those kind of like, I guess, I thought a lot about, am I being too like, when I was writing it, is this being too, what do you call it? Not gimmicky. Because it's like, is this necessary to have them sing? Is this like, oh, are you like a filmmaker trying to say, hey, look, I can do weird stuff? But then I kind of went back and forth on that, and I tried to kind of pull back on felt parts that I felt were unnecessarily like that. But then the kind of the goal of having like different genres, different characters, like kind of like time jump, kind of like conveying information in an unconventional order and stuff like that, was just kind of break you out of the reality of the film. Most like films, you're kind of supposed to be immersed in it and like kind of relate to the characters and go with them on the journey together and like that. But I have like a bunch of like theater friends who do like, you know, stage theater, and they were, I don't know too much about theater. I'm like from very like traditional Hollywood three act structure kind of storytelling. But then the theater stuff I was watching, like they were doing a lot of like different storytelling techniques, just like in the basics, like just distancing from the audience. Like the audience isn't what some plays are, like obviously like you're in it and Mamma Mia, like you're following the character, but some you're like, you're supposed to have a distance, and they keep giving these cues of like, you're watching a play, interpret it that way, like as a play, not as like, oh, this character is real, and which I guess is more suited to like on stage because you see the proscenium.
Yeah, stuff. You know, there's the first time we see the Romeo and Juliet couple, right? Yeah, yeah. Like the bus scene, you know, like it's very unconventional because like it's just like little visual cues, like they're just and it's very awkward, right? Like it's very awkward to watch, but like I, you know, it's kind of contributing to what you're talking about is to give it that sense of like, you know, this kind of unease, right? Mm-hmm. That everybody is feeling, this kind of like anxiety that people feel, right? Like I, you know, because I watched it again recently and it was like, yeah, that scene's a little bit like, I mean, the performances are really interesting too, right? And so I don't know if that's maybe kind of fits in with what you're talking about, like different ways of conveying the story, you know, like or through performance, right?
Yeah. That was like how long is that scene? Like I think like 4 minutes or so, and then it's like no dialogue, and I just told the actors like, but because there are like kind of beats, it's not just a no dialogue scene with like one mood, it's like there's supposed to be like changes in like first this is a situation changes and situation, but then do it all without dialogue.
Yeah.
So and no actions either.
It's like sitting on a bus,
the actors are like, oh.
It's pretty challenging for them, I guess, but you know it, and then you know they get off the bus and then there's like this kind of embrace, right? So it's like a really interesting scene and very challenging. You mentioned the kind of different musical pieces in it too. And I mean, overall, just to backtrack, like so many different genres and forms, you're trying so many different things. And I just enjoyed it so much the first time I saw it because, you know, it was just so different than a lot of kind of, I was watching some dull screeners of other films and it was just like really fresh, you know? So there's a few sequences that I just really, really love and that I wanted to ask you about. Mm. So number one, I mean, this is the one that I actually tell people about. And it's quite short, but it's in the office scene, right? So there's these kind of like your kind of typical salary, you know, quote unquote salary men working in an office. They're waiting for their boss to leave. And then and there's nothing to do, but and so they're one of the characters is on a spreadsheet and he just starts tapping a rhythm going from cell to cell. And then a coworker notices he's doing that. They get on a shared spreadsheet and they start this kind of like musical dance around a spreadsheet. And I think it was like, it's one of my favorite things this year of like all the films that we've seen. So talk about that scene a little bit. Give us a little bit of the backstory on that scene.
Yeah. Because, you know, like a lot of people we've worked in jobs, office kind of jobs where another kind of like the title, Unidentified, I think is another kind of thing where the whole thing kind of started, like a wordplay kind of thing of identity and UFO, unidentified flying objects and kind of thing. And I think it's just that emotion of when I was working in like that kind of office environment and it's like, this isn't me. But these are actions, but I know who I really am. Not even of like, this isn't what I want to do, but it's like kind of your sense of identity of this. I think I am this person, but this is not what I am being right now. Yeah. You know that sense? And kind of like I had the guy who plays him, he's not an actor, he's a dancer. And kind of like
is he the choreographer in
yes he's also the other choreographer scenes, right? Did a lot of kind of like dance films and music videos with him. And I had this kind of sense of this character of like he's a dancer, like he's a dancer slash like musician, like music is like who he is, but then he's in this office white collar job, but he's just expressing like wanting to express like who he believes he is, which is a dancer slash like musician, like kind of person. But Having to do it in different ways like that, I guess.
I mean, the spreadsheet thing is just, I think, so relatable, you know? Oh my gosh, so many tabs open here on my computer, and just there, half of them are spreadsheets, right? So just like we living through cells, you know? So I mean, the other sequence is kind of like a set piece, you know? Musical set piece, dance set piece. The scene on the roof, I mean... really fantastic. Again, just like really powerful movement and music. So I'm wondering if you can give us a little bit of the background on that, how that scene came about, who are these people in it.
To give a little background for within the movie, like it's kind of it's the second time that rooftop appears. The first time there's a character who they're part of like this religion, this new religion. I mean, the UFOs have been there on Earth for like 29 years, so you can kind of imagine some people will form new religions around it. And this is one such religion where, you know, they kind of like wait for the rainwater to fall from it and stuff. So I guess that was kind of my whole exploration of like religious thought, but also like tribalism. And I think this is the dance scene is at night, but then the previous scene is at day, and I kind of wanted to explore kind of like the good sides of religion, like I think like what good religion does in society, like for the characters, how it provides like healing and like kind of sense of community, and just that in a kind of more individualistic kind of world, like you might not find in other places. And at the night scene, I kind of wanted to show what the darker side, not like a huge like taking down religion critique of it, but just kind of like at the same time, because there's this good side of religion, but because of those good things, because it creates a community that feels like we are who we are as an identity, that by definition creates the sense of the other, like this is us, and therefore just having the word us means there must be someone who is not us. And that sense of like a chosen kind of like tribal kind of thing that can come out and kind of think feel like negative.
Some might
ways.
Identify it as like a cult or a sect or something.
But
like that,
also
right?
Even in that dance, I kind of had like with the choreography, like each section had kind of wanted to have them come up with stories. And like, for example, like one of them was like kind of like struggles. Like one is like this is their religion. They come on their religious day or whatever, but in the weekday they'll have like their day jobs or whatever. It's not one of those cults where they live together or thing. So they, you know, they have like their office jobs or like whatever, and they come and they release it here. And I grew up in like a church environment, Christian environment. Like Korean people do a lot of like immigrant churches. And there used to be like kind of like a sharing time. You talk about your struggles and then everyone prays for you.
Yeah.
And in a non-religious environment, like there's like kind of no place for that. There's nowhere where you can kind of get that as like in a formal community thing. There's like friends you talk to and stuff. Yeah. And I wanted to kind of show this side of religion where there is that healing or whatever aspect, but that also at the same time is the reason they are combative. It gives them the strength, which is at the same time like a very positive healing thing, but also a very tribal combative thing. So that's kind of like the night, kind of the choreography is like very, at the same time of being like healing, and people are feeling part of one and feeling relieving their stress, but at the same time it's like powerful and like
Kind of attacking,
aggressive at the same time.
And then so who are the performers in that scene?
So they're all kind of like dancers that I kind of fell into, this group of friends that I've been working with like 3-4 years, like a lot of dancers and theater theater people, we've been making like these dance films and music videos and like theater video installations and stuff. So
yeah,
they're great.
I know it's like, again, it's a really, it's a really powerful part of the film. You know, there's a part earlier in the film where in one of the documentary sequences, there's somebody, you know, playing a cello, I think, and they say, you know, music is a universal language, right? And said in this context, like, you know, we hear people say that all the time, but like said in the context of like, oh, UFOs being here, right? The universe takes on a different meaning, right? So you have a lot of music in this film. You know, in that rooftop dance scene, the music is incredible. So just what was your overall approach? Because you have that, which is like vocalization and music. You have some kind of more like kind of rock songs, rock opera kind of stuff. And then the score. So itself. So talk about some of your approach to the music and some of your collaborators on it.
Oh yeah, yeah. So the main composer, his name is Noe Gonzalez. He lives in Berlin, and I met him, must be like 6 or 7, because he did the music for my short film also. And I've been collaborating with him ever since. Like, and so he did the score, so most of the music. And with him, I think we talked a lot about, that theme, the sense of... like isolation, confusion, and also we wanted to have a theme that kind of like repeats, and because of the repetition kind of like has a bigger impact. We talked about like it's something just like a really simple melody, like we talked about like a La Strada, Fellini's La Strada, and like how it's like such a simple melody, but because it's repeated in all these different contexts, when it's repeated in the final context, it's like it brings everything kind of together in that way. And we kind of wanted to do that with the theme, the main theme, and
which is these kind of like long, like tonal pulses. It's really you feel it. It's almost like you don't really notice it, but you feel it in the end. And then you have some kind of more kind of like song cues in.
Remember in the office scene, his friend that joins in, that's his name is Taegyeol. His band is called Zagumachi, and they're a band, and they have like, they're kind of like folk rock.
Okay.
And the two songs with the lyrics are both his songs. Like, we just played his song when he puts in the earphone. That's just his recording of his band song. And then later on, a lot of the actors sing a song, and that's just kind of like he rearranged it for the actors to sing. So,
and then what about that rooftop scene, the one at night?
Oh yeah, that was part of Noé's compositions. Oh okay. Yeah yeah. Okay. Oh, there was kind of this vocal element that is, it's called kum. It's like a traditional Korean music technique, I guess. I don't know too much about it, but the dancer, the choreographer, his specialty, his major is in traditional Korean dance, you know, with like the traditional costumes and such. So he kind of knew about that world, and I talked with him about that, and
okay. No. I mean, like the music is so powerful, and really, the ending sequence, like, and the way. Ending a film is really difficult, you know? But something about the way that this, I don't know how to say this without like spoiling too much, but you have this like transition from the kind of interiority of the film to almost like not the making of, but just like the makers behind this film, right? And I just love that, and how it's paired with the music. I'm just curious about that, like,
I guess thematically there, in terms of like to explain it, I think it is the expression of kind of like making stories. Mm-hmm. Kind of like by the end, I think the sense I have is like everybody's making their own stories. Like there's in the world of the film, there's the UFO, but mm-hmm. nobody knows why it's there. Like if there are aliens inside or if there are aliens among us, like
yeah.
there is no answer. There's no scientific answer. We can't, there's, and in that situation, what people do is you make up stories like to explain it so you feel safe. So mm-hmm. it feels like the world makes sense. And
yeah.
I feel like that's what every character is. And every character is sure, like when they're doing the talking head interviews or the way they're living their life, they are sure, they believe this is the reality. But there is no proof. There's just a stories they made up and everybody's making up different stories. And mm-hmm. I kind of feel like that's what people do, right? Like in our world.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, like making the movie is our version of that. Like this movie is also made. It's we're trying to, there's like a philosophy and like the kind of things that are in the film, but it's not like we discovered some golden tablet where it's the truth. Like we made it up, like, and we are just, you know, I guess thematically, that's
yeah,
the kind of
yeah. It thing. Just really ties so well together. It feels so organic, you know. Mm-hmm. We see a character. I mean, this is not going to spoil too much, but we see a character, you know, kind of going around the world and meeting some of the people that we saw in other parts of the film, mm-hmm. and then it just kind of blends in. I guess like if you haven't seen the film, like. Maybe fast forward this part, but I mean, I'm just curious about like, did you go to all those places and were you and he like traveling around the world? Because like, some of that some of that is maybe, like that was all shot in location. Or?
Yeah, North Korea we couldn't go to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When I saw that, I was like, wait a minute. Yeah,
but other places, mostly we went to. China we also couldn't go to.
Uh-huh.
But the other place, this was, oh, and also like we shot this, we shot like right before the pandemic. It's like, and how we planned it out in the beginning is we had like a very low budget. Like, mm-hmm. We got like funding from the Korean Arts Council. So film council. So it's like a very low budget film, but so I wanted to have all these countries, but it wasn't so important which country specifically it was, just that we need a certain number of countries that look kind of different,
yeah,
like some
yeah.
that look European, some that look Asian and stuff like so. I just went on Skyscanner and looked for like the cheapest one-way ticket from Seoul.
Yeah.
And just, oh, okay. And then from here, what's the cheapest one-way ticket from here? And kind of heading west the whole time. So we went to like Cambodia and then India and then Egypt and then like to Germany and then to... And then we kind of made a circle so mm-hmm. that... all these one-way tickets added up to kind of like a, you know, way back circle back to Korea. So, yeah.
No, it was really cool. I, you know, anytime you see a little bit kind of behind the curtain and how it's made, you know, and I think it just fits so well with the film. I guess, we are going to take a break and then we're gonna do our Come Eat With Me segment. So so we'll take a break, and then we'll ask you some quick fire questions.
Okay.
Great. We're back, and now we're kind of doing our Come Eat With Me section of the podcast. And so actually Jude has no idea what we've gotten for him, so we're going to open it up, and so maybe I'll just go ahead and open yours up.
Okay.
Now I understand it had been you had been away from Toronto for a long time, so this is one of my favorite things to eat. Is It's a jerk chicken sandwich, but the chicken is stuffed inside of a beef patty.
Yeah.
Stuffed inside the cocoa bread with some coleslaw. So
I've never had this
before.
You've
never had this? Okay. We were talking to Anthony Shim from Rice Boy Sleeps, and I explained what this sandwich was, and he said, wow, it's like the turducken of like jerk chicken food.
Yeah.
So
I know all the elements.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the beef patty, the food of university students.
So like, we can kind of open it up. I don't know if we can see that, Joe. So there's jerk chicken.
Layers and layers.
Inside of a
Inside
of a beef patty, inside of a bread. So it's a bit of a mouthful, and we have a dinner later, but it's okay if you don't finish it all. But
I think I will.
Yeah. Okay. So let's have a bite, and then we're gonna ask you some questions.
Ooh.
So you know, I'm originally from California. We don't really have that much like. There is some Caribbean community, but here, obviously, it's such a huge influence in the local culture. And so, yeah, I just love this sandwich. It's a bit messy, though. Let's see if I have a napkin. I just think it's amazing. It's like whoever thought of this is genius. Like to
I know
put a beef patty inside of a sandwich.
Beef patty. It's one of those things. You always go to like the cheap street foods. Like this time when I came back to Toronto, it's like it's these foods that you think of. And like I lived in Korea in middle school, and then like. Like 13 years later, when I went back to Korea, the first thing I go to is like the street food, and they have like the stalls where they have like fried, like stuff.
Yeah,
and like the tteokbokki is like on the street stalls. Like that's the first thing you go to, I think. Like
yeah, for sure.
I remember? I gotta get the hot dogs while I'm downtown in Toronto.
oh, we had some of those last night. We should definitely get some street meat.
Yeah.
Okay. So, let's start with the most controversial surprise question first. And this is our quick fire. Listeners of the show already know this question, but all right. So, you can only choose one of these options.
Okay.
Like for the rest of your life.
Oh.
Rice, noodles, bread. So not just sliced bread, but also like a tortilla or, naan or something like that. Or potatoes. This is our carbohydrate questionnaire. So what do you choose and why?
Only one. So I lose all the rest of the
three. You lose all the rest.
Oh, gosh. Noodles, I think.
Noodles. Okay, why?
I like noodles.
That's it?
Like,
what's your favorite noodle dish?
And because, like, I think with noodles, you get, like you get Italian food, you get Chinese food, you get like Korean food. Like there's like, I think almost every culture has their noodle, right? Like, and you get rice noodles, you get like flour noodles, you get like spaghetti noodles, like egg noodles.
All right.
It's the most adaptable, I think.
Okay.
Like some genres, you like potatoes is quite limiting.
Yes. I mean, it's in there as a carbohydrate. Yeah, I mean, there's not so much that you can do with it. But some people have picked potatoes.
Yeah. I love fries, though. But it, I have this great recipe for fries that, that I've been
what
making.
What is it?
I found this on YouTube. And it's like, you don't fry it. You do it in the oven.
Uh-huh.
It was a really popular recipe, so people might have know it. But you boil it until it's like almost falling apart. Uh-huh. Like you get all the starch, so it's like almost falling apart, and there's like starch all around it. And you carefully lay it out on a pan, and you just drizzle olive oil on it, And you have to do it for like 40 plus 40 minutes. So it's like 80 minutes, but most of it's just 80. So it takes a really long time, but most of it's just waiting time. So you do it and then you cook other stuff. Yeah. But it is, there's like YouTube video, and it's like glass on the outside. It's so crispy on the outside and so soft on the inside. You have to make, like, they're like wedge fries. You have to make them kind of huge.
Okay.
And it's kind of like my go-to recipe when I invite people to my house. It's like,
well, you're gonna have to send us the link and put it in the show notes.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay, so we have some other questions for you. Feel free to keep eating if you like.
Oh yeah,
it's actually pretty spicy.
Oh, I'm Korean, so
yeah. I find in my older age I can't eat spices much, but I still like it. But. Now, you're kind of, this film is pretty new, so, you know, you haven't maybe had a lot of chance to show it around publicly yet, kind of at the beginning of your run, but, you know, I'm sure you've shown it to people, heard feedback, so what is a question about it that nobody's asked you yet that you actually want to tell about, a story about the film that you'd like to tell?
Oh, that's an interesting question. nobody's asked. Well, there's usually a lot of questions at the Q&A because it's a bit confusing, the movie. I think a lot of people find it quite confusing. And as I kind of said, that's like a feature, not a book,
I feel.
But confusing question that people have asked. I'm not sure, because for me, maybe this is kind of a cop-out, but I kind of don't really care so much that people understand the film logically for me. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like, and people do have kind of like questions about how does that work? How does that connect? So did that? But then for me, it's kind of like, if you saw the film and you didn't fall asleep, like you enjoyed just each segment, I'm hoping by the end, with the ending, there will be this feeling. If the film works for you, there will be this feeling that you feel.
Yeah.
And if you're left with that, for me, that's kind of the goal. It's, for me, I don't want to be like pretentious, but I want it to feel more like poetry rather than a novel, where a novel, you kind of read it and you know what you like about it. Oh, I like that plot twist. Oh, I like that character's thing. But then with a poem, I guess maybe if you're, because I'm not a poet, when I read a poem that I love, like I really love, I don't know why I like it. Maybe because I don't know all the mechanics of what the poet is doing. Yeah. But then you just really like it, right? Sometimes, and it just hits you and you don't really know why, but there is definitely that feeling that it gets across. And I'm hoping this is more of a film like that. Like, I don't want people to like, I'll take that. I do, if you really want to, like, you know, try to figure it out, like, I don't know. But it's not like a movie like, I don't know, Primer or like Inception or something like that, where figuring out is like very important. I feel like kind of like if you can get that feeling it conveys, like that's kind of the point of it, I feel like. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, what is a film that changed your life?
I guess. Oh, good thing I took that bite.
Yeah, take your time. Have an excuse.
Change my life.
Kind of like change the way you see things, like, you know, how you change the way you saw what movies could do, or, you know?
I think because for me, maybe similar to a lot of like Asian immigrant children, but filmmaking or like the arts is like very outside my sphere, my world growing up. Nobody in my family was very like in the arts or like introduced me to like, you know, films rather than like movies, you know, or like going to art galleries or stuff like that. So I think it was like in high school, and this might be like a very common I think my first, like, my hero filmmaker was probably, like, Scorsese watching Taxi Driver. A lot of teenager kind of. Yeah. And, of course, I misunderstood it completely. And, like, But, but then it's probably like not one film, but there's like there were like steps because the journey was so long. Like because I met like friends since who I have a friend whose like parents were like actors and like you know they took her to like art galleries when she was young and like watched like these films and like kind of like little but you're not gonna show like a 4-year-old like Fellini and stuff. Yeah. But then like little by little they had exposure to that. But for me it's like. Nobody around me was at all. It was just, you know, like growing up, it's just Indiana Jones and like Back to the Future, but which I still love, but yeah. It's not this like film world that you learn about once you get into yeah. filmmaking, all the like important filmmakers and stuff like that. So it was very like steps. Oh, this exists? I had no idea. And then, of course, when I got into university, I wanted to go into the film program, but I couldn't because I didn't know. I'm supposed to write an essay, but it's like... So basic. I like Indiana Jones and stuff like that. So, of course, the film programs, probably, I don't know, I haven't been, but I'm thinking they're going to be more like my friends whose parents showed them, like Fellini and stuff like that growing up, and they kind of understand films more. But then, so I kind of like my education started just by, in university, I think like the internet was... around it was like starting but so you could see like the syllabuses of all the film program students so I would just like go into their thing and look at this syllabus and look at all the films they're watching and look at all the books they're reading mm-hmm. and I just went to the bookstore yeah. and bought those books and read them and watched all the movies and kind of like did that for 4 years I guess yeah. and it was my kind of a long journey of educating myself so it was very like steps mm-hmm. I can't really think of what the other kind of steps were yeah, but
yeah
there was yeah definitely yeah
well if you remember
I rambled
one,
on
so, that's okay I there's a flip side of this one so mm-hmm. You know do you have a show or a movie that is like a guilty pleasure like you feel like you know what I mean, right?
I don't know how guilty I should be about this, but there's a film that I love, like that I would put in my top 5 films of all time, but nobody likes. And it's not like because it's like, it's not even popular. It's not even like a Avengers kind of thing like that, like film people don't like. It's Cloud Atlas.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Nobody likes it. I don't know if anyone likes it.
Which one? That's the...
It's the Wachowskis, that's right, the Wachowskis with yeah. like Tom. It's like all these different characters yeah. through like different timelines and they're linked by like different things. And the music is so good. And my friend always makes fun of me for liking it. For like, oh, you mean the film with like, I think there's like, black face and yellow face right. and like there's like different races playing different
right
and
right.
I guess back then they kind of it wasn't such I don't know how they got but it was but it's like it's, forget about that
they were going for something yeah, and it didn't
they were
quite
going
work.
For yeah, yeah you know there's it was like they did it like other ways too like I think an Asian
yeah
like
I'm
they're like oh, yeah yeah there was all now, like yeah. that and but I don't know I just I love it so much. Like, it's so good. And I think just maybe my film is also a bit influenced by that in a way of like just not like it's not about like one character's journey, one character's decision that changes things. It's like the ideas and like the like whole of humanity yeah. kind of but like
yeah.
together like we yeah. change the world yeah. together kind yeah. of thing it's not one hero's like you know
yeah all right and then finally like you know you've finished Unidentified like it's playing around so you know what's next for the film and then what's next for you personally
So for the film Unidentified, we have like a few more festivals it's scheduled to play at. So, and we're still like looking for like distribution, mm-hmm. I guess, because we're kind of at the beginning of the run. So Yeah, hopefully. I'm just hoping to, you know, get it out there to show as many people as I can, I guess.
And then how about you? Like, what's next for you?
Kind of hoping to, like, write a script, second feature soon. I kind of have an idea, but it's, like, very in the beginning stages, but I'm hoping to do kind of similar to to, like, what I did with the short film and this, where it's, like, sci-fi genre, but not really. And I guess in this era, like, to get funding and stuff, you kind of need a brand, or it's helpful to have a brand, and kind of, if I show them, you know, this is what I do. I make genre films that aren't really, like, kind of like that. So, yeah, I think it's going to be kind of about, like, AI.
Okay.
But really not about AI.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. That's all the time we have. So I want to thank you, Jude, for being part of Backstory. I'm the host, Aram C.Y. Collier. We have Joseph Chung live mixing for us. Please like and subscribe Backstory and give us a 5-star review on your favorite platform. You can reach out to us at backstory@realasian.com. For more information about Real Asian Film Festival, go to realasian.com. And thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll finish our sandwich
now. Oh, yeah. Oh.
You want some more water? You've been listening to the Backstory Podcast from the Toronto Real Asian International Film Festival. Please like and subscribe and give us a 5-star review on your favorite platform. You can watch these episodes on Real Asian's YouTube channel, too. And we love hearing from you, so write to us at backstory@realasian.com. For more information about us, we're @realasian or go to realasian.com.